It is Sunday, January 21st. There was an SNL last night on Sunday, January 20th, and that means that Mike and I are here to talk about it. The good, the bad, the ugly, the hilarious, and the boy. So join me as we break down Jessica Chastain's episode of Saturday Night Live. I am your host of the SNL Recap, Rich Tackenberg, and I am joined, as always, by my intrepid partner in Recap, Mr. Mike Bloom. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Rich. I'm feeling better than SNL's makeup team did after they finally got Kate McKinnon into all of that prosthetics to play Robert Mueller on Weekend Update.
Boy, if I ever want to complain about my job, Louis Zachran and team really, really delivered this week in many ways, but no more so than that Robert Mueller. Kudos to, as we say, it takes so many people to make great comedy happen. And as you say, this week, I think really the makeup team gets a huge shout out for all of their efforts. That was pretty amazing.
Yes, very much overshadowed Alex Moffat's Prince William bald cap, overshadowed the
and
shadowing
knows.
That was even going on that bald cap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I'd say the difference is for me is one of those makeup jobs was well worth the effort and one maybe not so much. So, But let's get into it. I thought this was a very uneven episode. I think it was we had a rough start to the episode and then we picked up some steam. And then this was a bit of a roller coaster. We had some really fun moments. We had some low lows. We had a couple of hairpin turns. I'm not really sure if I've fully digested this episode yet for me, although I would say a great effort by Jessica Chastain through the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm definitely, this is sort of like flip-flopping almost our opinions on last week. I'm higher on this episode than you are, it seems at first glance. Going back to my list, I actually put this one in at number 3, right
wow.
below Chance the Rapper and right below above Tiffany Haddish. I really liked a lot of the stuff that was going on in the first half. And from my perspective, there really wasn't a lot going on in the second half that made me hit those low lows as you might be talking about. I thought everything was actually pretty much an even course if we're going back to that car metaphor. So I'm excited. Second week in a row, we have some disparate opinions here, Reg. So I'm excited to talk about both sides of each issue here.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised to hear you say that. So let's break it down. Let's get into it. So, you know, interesting. Before the show began, my wife and I were talking about what do they open with? There's so much going on. Obviously, the problem that SNL I'm sure faced is the biggest story of all is the government shutdown. But that didn't happen till Friday night. The sketches are written Tuesday night, and really by Friday the show is all but locked, save for cutting of sketches. So they obviously couldn't write a government shutdown sketch that might had to have been cut. So instead, we took an interesting tact here. We're going to have we're going to focus on the president's physical results, somewhat confusing and surprising medical results, and we're going to have the doctor sort of go through this. I'm not going to call this an boy, but I will say for me, this was a mess. This was a great for me. The premise sort of didn't pan out for me, and I thought it didn't work for me. But I'm guessing maybe you felt a little different. What did you think?
Marginally. Think that it's not exactly newfound territory, right? It's essentially the game is, hey, here comes the doctor on. He's clearly exaggerating the results, you know, to make it look like it's better than it obviously is. I'll start by giving this sketch, as always, this cold open, extra credit for it not involving Alec Baldwin, for not bringing on a Trump member. We get a little bit more of, you know, a member of the administration here, a bit more Sarah Huckabee Sanders, even though we're still trying to figure out the character. I think Beck is admirable here as he's looking like an admiral, as Dr. Ronnie Jackson. You know, I think that there are some fun nuggets of lines nested in there, you know, saying, because, you start with like the usual braggadocious stuff, but then you get into, you know, legs that seem to go on forever. And when it gets to the point of it's my expert medical opinion that the president has a rockin' bod with the perfect amount of cushion for the pushin, and if given the chance, I would. It's just like that. I think once it got into that territory, once it got a little bit more playful and goofy, that's when I enjoyed it. You know, him talking about how he takes Propecia as an inside joke and how he's been pounding pineapple juice to keep everything sweet. I would say that the writing on this sketch was not fantastic, but this is the umpteenth time I'm saying it, but give me this over going to the Oval Office itself and having Baldwin as Trump essentially recap what's happened over the course of the week. I do agree that the government shutdown is probably the biggest news item to cover. There's also this really, really weird moment with Pete Davidson appearing as himself. We never get the story as to what happened with his wrist. Maybe something was going on with him and Larry David's daughter. One can only know, but really odd moment. Not the only meta moment of the night, but very odd moment to have Pete Davidson appear as himself in the cold open.
Yeah, so, and it's funny you talk about it. I think, you know, for me, I think, and we won't belabor it too much, here was my fundamental problem with this. The problem is what we uncover as the audience, sort of the funny concept that we're going for, what is the underlying premise of this sketch is that the reason that the White House doctor gave President Trump such a glowing physical review is that he clearly has a crush on him and is sexually attracted to him. Okay, but the problem is I don't know this doctor character before the unusual thing. I don't know. This is not like Sarah Huckabee Sanders doing it or some other character we already know. So it's like, here's a character I don't know, and now we're going to now say that he is doing all these crazy things because he's got a sexual crush on the president. It sort of didn't land for me because I didn't know what he would be like normal to now see him act in this crazy way. So
interesting. I did not. That was not my take whatsoever. I thought it was that Trump was making him say it. You know, he had that line where he's like, you know, I made the president take this cognitive test and he insisted on it. He grabbed me by the collar with the strength of a man that would usually fail the test. So I'd like to think that this character was browbeaten into doing this to the point of where he's like emasculated enough that he's saying these very sexually lascivious things.
Interesting. I didn't take it that way, but maybe you're right. Maybe that's what they were going for. So again, I guess for me, minus points if we're not even sure what the underlying premise was, or though maybe just I'm a dummy. Don't get me wrong. Maybe I'm just missing it, but that's a tough one. And I also wanted, you mentioned sort of the Pete Davidson that we know we're going to shoehorn the Stormy Daniels porn star thing in here, which, you know, I mean, I always like the idea of like, oh no, I'm not, you know, it's sort of like I'm James Franco. I'm just rehearsing a part for a Christmas movie, but I don't know that Pete Davidson necessarily, like, there's nothing about Pete Davidson as we know him, the SNL cast member, that is so specific to the idea of Stormy Daniels or porn stars or something. So it was a cute moment, but it wasn't like, oh my God, that's such a great payoff because of the things we know about Pete Davidson that it would be funny that it's actually him, not a character. Anyway, the other thing I was going to ask you is, this is not a plus or a minus. I thought it very odd the amount of wig and makeup work that was being done for the SNL cast members to just be reporters asking questions. Mikey Day had a weird wig on. I'm trying to think of who else. I think Heidi Gardner was unusually sort of a spiffy. It was just very surprising how much effort they put into the characters of just random straight people, straight men in the comedy sense, asking questions of the doctor. Very, very odd to me.
I mean, you got to have a warm-up, right? This show is going to be, as we mentioned before, very, very heavy on the makeup and the hair. I'd say there probably isn't a sketch in here where someone does not have a wig on at some point.
Sure. So I feel
like this, maybe they just felt like, all right, you know, we dipped our toes in the water. Might as well submerge our whole bodies here and have everyone wear wigs. We've got the whole Daryl Hammond rambling through the names at the beginning. I think we have some time before we change it to our monologue stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? We'll agree to disagree. And again, I will even say still there was funny in here. It just sort of didn't work for me. But that's OK. We get a nice live from New York at Saturday Night and we get to first time host Jessica Chastain. My wife and I quite liked her in Molly's Game, the new Aaron Sorkin movie that she was just in. After a little bit of sort of a comedy about how she's normally a serious actress, we get to a sort of a song in honor of the Women's March. I thought she was super likable, but nothing in here really worked beyond for me just sort of a smile. I felt like the train still hasn't left the station yet for me.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that this monologue was not a good introduction to Jessica Chastain because sort of to piggyback off of what you just said, I thought she was sublime as a host. I know we talked a lot about Sam Rockwell, but Jessica Chastain really, yes. She seemed like one of those types of people that like could blend in seamlessly with the cast. Maybe this is me being hyperbolic, but I just think she did such a nice job. And you never know when it comes to movie actors, but I know that Jessica Chastain is also a Broadway veteran as well, so I think it makes sense in terms of a live setting. She could be a little more honed in and naturalistic, and so she really blended in. And especially when it came to like reading cue cards, there are so many sketches that she does where you really can't tell that she's reading cue cards or that she sticks out, that she's not rehearsing with them every single week. But this is not, as I said, the best starting point for it. I mean, I liked where this was going, and I thought it was like a good statement. A little disparate. I think that we went around too much. You know, we went from 80 in the audience to talking about having the pee hat, and then Leslie Jones pulling your favorite typical Leslie Jones move, Rich, of coming in and being like, nope, it's pussy hat. Bye. Really did not understand what was going on with Beck and Pete and what they were trying to say. And I got like the little joke going on with Melissa, but I don't know. I when you look at things like Welcome to Hell, for instance, that I think showcased the female cast much more as a whole, I would have kind of liked to see that a little bit more. This definitely has an indicator. You've mentioned this before, where sometimes on SNL, the monologue is the very last thing they work on during the week. This very much seemed like it was slapped together, maybe even only a few hours before they went on air. And unfortunately, because of that, it suffered from being too much at once.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm going to add to your, I'm going to sort of ask the whole crowd to put a pin in the idea that my appreciation for Jessica Chastain was not necessarily in the good sketches, but I really appreciated what she did in the sketches that didn't work post update. So we'll come back to that when we get to Taco Math. But I have a lot to say about how much I like Jessica Chastain in this episode. So let's move on to our first live sketch. Again, a bit of a repeat. We've seen this time we're doing another Bachelor. I don't know why they don't call it Bachelor, which is always very odd to me.
I wonder if it's some sort of like copyright thing, because we have Farm Hunk. Now we have Car Hunk. I think there was another time that they did it as well. I don't really exactly know what it is, but you'd have to assume, because otherwise they'd outright name it, right?
But they do make fun of, it is odd because they do make fun of other things. So you would think like, you know, this clearly for me falls under the category of parody. You are parodying The Bachelor. You would have every right to use The Bachelor name. Now, maybe they just don't want to get into it, or maybe to them, this just makes them giggle. So it was very strange to me. I was very surprised by that. So, but as we said, regardless, so we're back, we're back with Car Hunk. This is purely, I'm sorry, I just looked up real quick. Beard Hunk was the last
one that we had with
Ronda Rousey. Yes. So we're back with our hunks. This is pure Mad Libs. The format of the sketch is going to be exactly the same every time. We're just going to sort of roll in funny lines. And the funnier the lines, the funnier the sketch. The more that the lines sort of miss, the more that the sketch kind of misses. And I thought this for me was just real fun. It was not the best, Bachelor parody we've done. But again, I just think that they just put in enough funny lines that just had us laughing through the whole thing. And once it ends, it's like, okay, that was good. So I give it to them for finding new ways to mine this very tired trope.
On that note, I think the one thing that I want to hone in on to start is actually the focus on said Car Hunk, because from what I've been hearing from both my wife and other podcasters, apparently this season of The Bachelor is really boring from both a Bachelor perspective and the contestant perspective. So I like the fact that they made fun of that. And you also have, Car Hunk starting off saying, I'm too old to be on this show, so something's obviously gone wrong in my life. And then this absolutely random blink and you'll miss it thing where for one girl, they switch Alex Moffat out for Luke Knoll and then switch it back and make absolutely no mention of it. I'm not entirely sure what they were trying to say, as if like, all these white guys look alike. If so, I kind of wish they had pushed it further and like kept using all the different white guys from the cast, and even put Keenan at the end as sort of like a nice button on the end of it to sort of fill in. But like you said, this comes down to the girls and specifically the one-liners. And I thought there were a lot of fun things here. Specifically, I think the things that I liked the most were Jessica Chastain's character's descriptions of the specific dates that they went on, like playing mini golf with young Sheldon and playing a dead body on HBO's Crashing. thing. Again, the comedy lies in specificity. But there's some other great stuff in here. Like, I think it was Heidi who said, I'm a psychiatric nurse's patient. And I think, I don't know, 80 might get the MVP for me by saying, most of the people in my town don't have teeth, so I'm their queen there. And her apparently, like, when she mounts Car Hunk, which, as my wife said, apparently was a thing. There is some truth in this stuff. Like,
wow.
When Kate's character has the taxidermied squirrel, apparently there is a girl this season who is into taxidermy. Apparently something similar to this mounting situation happened. So it seems like maybe if we had been more well-versed in this, you and I might have enjoyed it even more than we did. But I'm totally with you. I thought this was a fun one.
Yeah, I like the at the beginning. It's like, we had a black bachelorette. Now we're back to the whites. And it was the Car Hunk and 12 Laurens that made me laugh. And even out of the gate, just the idea when she says in the high squeaky voice, I bet you can tell from my voice that I don't have a dad. I thought that was very funny. Also, when I think it was Jessica Chastain, or maybe it was Cecily, says she first apologizes by saying, sorry, I'm 30. I thought that was very funny. And Melissa, I felt like this was an episode where really the featured players really were driving the ship tonight. I mean, other than maybe Beck, and a little bit of, and Kate sort of in another league, this was a lot of Alex. This was a lot more Heidi Gardner than we've seen, Luke Null making sort of and Melissa Villasenor making an appearance, and Chris Redd, like, we're about to talk about doing a lot of stuff. So, I thought this was, I agree. The lines in this were very fun. I didn't know about the taxidermy, but I like when Kate says, oh no, when you ask about the taxidermy, Buster is like, no, he's just regular dead. I just thought it was very funny. So yeah, fun way to kick off. Not something we're going to remember, but an absolute, I felt like for me, it was like, okay, the show just started. Now we got some comedy going and we're going to go to a pre-tape. What will Chris Redd bring to, the now old trope of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? This was 3 minutes and 35 seconds. This was a long sort of musical sort of premise written by Chris Redd, Mikey Day, Streeter Seidel, directed by Oz Rodriguez, and this is a fun, like, what would it more be like if the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air tried to escape from the hood, and Method Man showing up to play a much more realistic sort of being chased by gangs. I will say in my focus group of two last night, I liked it much more than the other part of my focus group. I just thought this was really funny. I thought the longer it went, the more it kind of made me giggle. I thought this was really fun.
I totally agree. And I think it's just because, you said it's 3 hours. It's 3 hours. Some people might have thought it was 3 hours, 3 minutes and 35 seconds. And I can understand where people are coming from, where, like, maybe if it was edited a shorter amount together, if it was a little clippier, it would be even funnier. But I sort of like the fact that it was like a big run-on sentence. Like, it just kept going and going and going. And you could argue, like, did it flatline at one point? Because, you try to, in a perfect story, really try to build to a point and then de-escalate from there. But you start off with the gangsters who then shoot up the house, and you think, like, beat Uncle Phil within an inch of his life, and then he gets taken in by what he thinks is an FBI agent played by Jessica Chastain, who my other member of the focus group personally thought it was going to tie into the X-Files, considering, like, oh, here's a redhead who's part of the FBI, maybe. And though I would call that a cop-out, just because we got to see that happen with the Larry David episode a couple of years ago. So I hope they wouldn't fall into that trope once again. But it turns out that she was faking all along, because she owes money to the Yakuza. Shout out to Leo Yoshimura, making his second appearance in about a year or so on SNL as the leader of the Yakuza. And then it turns into a big gunfight with Uncle Phil coming out. Like, this got supremely ridiculous. And I was laughing along. Maybe I was just laughing along because it just kept going and going. But man, they really ended the sketch on such a great note with, and that's how I became Jasper Mitchell of White Ridge, New Hampshire. And he's just like, he's like a bunker man, like, huge ass beard, living in a tent made out of his own clothes in the middle of the woods. I thought it was a really fun way to just get to that final note. And not timely whatsoever, but it seemed like if Chris Redd is going to keep doing these random types of things that are just an extraordinary amount of fun, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I didn't feel – it was funny because I kept in my head as I'm watching it, enjoying, really loving sort of how it just kept turning and turning. I'm like, is Chris Redd doing a Will Smith impression or is he just doing Chris Redd? I couldn't tell. Again, I have not seen the – and really, it's not even a Will Smith impression. It's a specific impression from The Fresh Prince. I couldn't remember because it's been so long since I've seen it. So did you feel like he was doing an impression or did you just feel like he was just being – like sort of creating his own character – and sort of doing kind of the goofy nod along the way.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's the latter. I mean, I don't even think Will Smith in Fresh Prince had, for the most part, like the same hair that Chris had going on with like, right. You know, half part, half not. I might be misremembering it, but it seems like he was just sort of spinning off of that because, I mean, I feel like everyone from my generation knows that song. And so like when it first, and again, for the umpteenth time, everyone drank, giving kudos to the production values for really making this look like the opening, complete with the spinning chair on the graffitied wall and everything. But maybe it was more so just Chris Redd doing a takeoff on it and sort of doing his own style.
Yeah. And my other guess is that I had a thing, maybe because of the length of it. My suspicion is that this was going to come late in the show and we were going to see the high production value doctor's orders pre-update. And that given what was likely the logical response by the studio audience, they flipped the two. I don't know that to be true, but I would suspect that that is probably the case.
Well, I would say that was a good choice because I feel like starting with Car Hunk, arguably, and then running up to the musical guest. This is a very strong, not to, you know, couch my opinions too much because we're about to talk about the next two sketches, but I feel like this is a very strong run-up of sketches in the first half of this episode.
So I agree with you, although I would say for me, we take a little bit of pause here at Google Talks. This is a in-house sort of Google Hangout Q&A where Google is hosting a discussion about an issue of the day. This is sort of bullying. And I thought this was a wonderful reveal that of all the things someone can get bullied for, one person, Mikey Day's character, is bullied for looking like Bart Simpson. And I thought that comedically, we've really stalled out midway and it was like really fun. Like, OK, I love this idea. Where are we going to go from here? And then for me, it really just petered out.
Yeah, I mean, this was definitely buoyed for me by just the image of Mikey Day's character. Like, I can't help it, and the audience couldn't help it too. As soon as the reveal happened, which
yes,
I totally agree was fantastic, when they kept cutting to Alex Moffat in the foreground with Mikey Day's character just sitting there in the background, like, I couldn't help but giggle. It looked so ridiculous. I'm a huge Simpsons fan, and no matter how many, you know, what would the Simpsons look like in real life mock-ups you see, to see someone dressed up like Bart Simpson is just so, so funny to me. Not to mention, completely random, much like The Fresh Prince. I don't know if the writing staff was like on a 90s kick this week for some reason, but to have these two one right after the other was so, so interesting and so particular. I do agree that I would say I don't think this sketch completely flatlined. I would say that it stalled just because how do you go from there? I was thinking maybe they might go in the direction of like more and more people being revealed as looking like weird things. Again, another way for that hair and makeup department to truly shine, but they tried to focus on it. It was a bit odd. You have him being named Bert Sampson, which I don't know if I really enjoyed, or him talking about the Nelson laugh, or someone calling in as Maggie Simpson. I guess what kept my attention more were like the sub games going on, both with Jessica Chastain's perky host, who also like isn't necessarily good at her job, and she admits it. But I think I liked most Beck Bennett in the chairless desk, the standing desk, and just constantly cutting back to him giving these little quips about how much he does not enjoy his job at a standing desk.
Yeah, I wish we had more of that. I think for me, again, sort of getting back to the it was hard for me. And again, I'm not looking to shoot holes in it. I'm looking to like the sketch. But for me, the hard part is like we're saying, OK, he's getting bullied because he happens to look so much like Bart Simpson. But then even in the sketch, we refer to the fact that he does the hair, you know, the character of Bert Sampson. Mikey Day's character does his hair exactly like Bart's, wears the same shirt as Bart. So there's no explanation of, well, then then why, like, I felt like that needed to then be the sketch that, like, they needed to hammer the fact that if it bothers you, why are you intentionally dressing like Bart Simpson? And I don't even know Simpson, that I don't even know if that would have been hilarious, but at least I would have been able to understand the POV of the sketch, where this was like, it sort of tried to sort of go both ways, because I feel like it never sort of figured itself out. So we sort of, so it was odd that he was so upset by this. So, but you're right, yeah. A lot of the little sort of tidbits around. And again, kudos, as you said earlier, to Jessica Chastain trying to make a little something out of nothing about being the overzealous Google host unnecessarily. I don't know that she got a lot of laughs with it, but she stayed very committed to it.
Yeah, I wonder if, because I've seen some stuff online about how some people really enjoyed this sketch because they sort of looked at it through a filter of, okay, it's supposed to come at it through an irony standpoint of, here is, you know, they're trying to promote not bullying people, but they're all bullying this one person who looks like Bart Simpson. And if they did that, I kind of wish they went more into it. I don't exactly know at this point how they would, but if that's really the POV that they were coming from, sort of in association with what you were saying, I kind of wish we'd focused on it more. This was a sketch that I feel like was an interesting premise, but I wonder if it had been workshopped just a bit more, they could have turned out something really, really fun from this.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I will say the next sketch we get to a game show, I thought actually did sort of build in a fun way, even if it wasn't the most fantastic ending. It was a much more, I sort of followed along the whole way, was the game show, What Even Matters Anymore? And Jessica Chastain plays the host, just asking the question, the simple question that in the world of Trump, what even matters anymore? And this, I thought, was really fun. Again, I don't know that it ultimately paid off as well as we would have liked, but I thought overall, I thought this was just a lot of fun here, and I thought again so much that the premise held tight, and we understood where the host was coming from, and ultimately we're watching her sort of breakdown, and Jessica Chastain really just sort of digs in on this one, because the whole sketch is ultimately not on the writing, it's on the performance that we need to see Jessica break down to ultimately the point where we realize that, you know, suddenly the cast members are worried not about the character but Jessica Chastain, the host, who theoretically sort of wrote this and had the sketch created just so that she could complain about this. I thought it was really fun.
Rich, SNL is, you know, in 43 seasons at this point. I think it's fair to say that we are very rarely surprised by things that happen on SNL, especially when we get a game show sketch trotted out to us for the millionth time, quite literally. And I love the fact that this is a very rare point in SNL where they get to play with our expectations and completely subvert them. You know, at first, I don't know if I was on this sketch's side necessarily, just because this is the most vocally anti-Trump they've been in a while, but comically speaking, they weren't even that funny. It was more darkly funny or even just depressing. So at first I was sort of like, okay, I don't entirely know where they're going with this. Is the humor just, oh, it's funny because it's true? I'm sort of like worrying for this character, like a little bit of nervous laughter on behalf of the audience. So I would say the audience in general was kind of weird this week. I know that people were theorizing online that because a lot of people might have been there for Troye Sivan and a lot of his fans tend to be like a little bit on the younger side, maybe they were not necessarily there for the comedy of it all. But it really hits this great turn around the middle point where, as you said, Chastain's character, well, Victoria, I think was her game show alias, just starts completely unraveling. I love the fact that they start referencing like the game show being like, are there even points? You know, what exactly are we buzzing in for? And, you know, they do this quote unquote like Final Jeopardy thing while she downs this bottle of wine. I just love the effect of Jessica Chastain opening the bottle with her mouth and then just start chugging, and the answers to the Final Jeopardy thing were fun too, of, you know, what could be something that would matter. And I think it was Kate who wrote cancels the Olympics because flags are gay.
Yeah.
And then Keenan just knocks it home with the sex tape with Donald Jr.
because that checks a lot of boxes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I thought those were some really
but
fun
you're
moments.
Right though, what sold it was the fact that during the music, the timer music, she's chugging the white wine the entire time.
Yeah.
And that to me is what sells it in such a great setup. It was really fun.
Yeah, and so I loved this reveal that, oh no, this was just something, as you said, in the canon that Jessica Chastain had set up a game show to talk about how she's really not okay with everything that's going on. And I loved sort of the cast reaction to it. I could have done without Cecily's thing of like, oh my God, it's true. Nothing really does matter anymore, and walk off. Like, I found that a little unnecessary, but maybe I'm just like salivating over this sketch because, again, we very, very rarely get something that genuinely surprises me on SNL, especially 43 seasons in. But I have to give this kudos, not only for its concept and its turn, but for Jessica Chastain's performance. Under any other host, I'm not entirely sure if it gets pulled off as well as it was here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's get to the musical act. We, you know, we come back from commercial and Jessica Chastain in a elegant black dress introduces us to my own mortality. I Troy Sivan, I guess is his name. I just was watching him. I felt like I am an old creepy guy for even watching this. It felt wrong to me. I felt wrong. I felt like this is so clearly not for me. I don't know what's going on. This is not to say that he's not talented or that he's not good at what he does, but it was for me sort of the furthest afield from musical guests that from where I normally I can be like, oh, not my style, but very good. This for me, I couldn't even sort of settle on like I understand where this is coming from, you know, musically and performance and who this person is. I was just sort of like, okay. So, Mike, you're younger than me. Help me. Save me from myself.
Oh, boy. Very good Evanescence quote there. But yeah, I mean, first of all, the kid looked like he just got out of the shower. I'm not sure what was going on with the hair there. Maybe the SNL hair department was working on him.
Thought he got out of something else. I'm glad you said shower. That is a much more rated G version of what I was going to say. So let's go with that.
Yeah, starting with the yellow spotlight, maybe not a great look from, I'm assuming, what you're talking about. So he performs these two songs, My, My, My and The Good Side. I like The Good Side more. That was more of the slowed down acoustic complete with a wind machine for some reason. I thought actually accentuated his voice because My, 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 what can I say more about it? But My, 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 he tried to work that stage, which I'll give him all the credit for, because again, 8H is a very awkward stage to play, but there was just something off about it, whether he was out of tune or that the song just like was not highlighting his voice a lot. And then you have these weird strobe projections going on behind him. It just didn't really play for me. So I think, you know, this also might be one of the first times he's performing these songs really live. I mean, I guess kudos to him for, I guess, you know, he has a weird story, a history of like he's a YouTube vlogger who also became, you know, I think he's a South African artist. So like I'm happy he presumably got some more exposure via SNL, but not particularly for me. On did it that.
I will just yes and everything you said. And let's say, you know what? If you were there to see Troy and he delivered what you want, I'm happy for you. But for the rest of us, let's move on to Weekend Update. So this was for me a very mixed Weekend Update. I thought a lot of good jokes, some really tough features, and then an ending that we'll talk about. But out of the gate, I'd say, you know, again, joke wise, they have so much good stuff to work with here. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised. But again, you know, that doesn't take away from the talent of Jost and Che. I thought just a lot of funny on the jokes, and really just was just like, ah, okay, good. This is what I came for. We're really hitting on all cylinders with a lot of the jokes. I thought this was really fun to start.
Yeah, this is the second week in a row that it felt like we've had a very lengthened Weekend Update. I thought maybe last week it was just because, oh, we're back for the new year, sort of like what happened with the cold open. But again, this Weekend Update, we got three features, went on for probably at least, again, close to 15 minutes. And I wonder if that part of it is because Jost and Che are part of the new head writing staff. I wonder if it's part of just because the show has started realizing that these guys are good. They really, really are. And again, drink again, because I'll talk about how great these two were on Weekend Update. I don't want to just read all the lines that they were talking about, but when you have Joe starting off Weekend Update by saying, you know, Trump blames Schumer for the government shutdown because Trump never misses the chance to blame a minority. When you start off on there, it's so, so good. And then Che talking about how, you know, if the government shuts down, should I pay all my taxes? I feel like the government owes us an eagle or an apple pie or something. I think my favorite run might be Joe's talking about the whole Stormy Daniels stuff and Mike Pence having to put up with it. He says at this point Mike Pence would feel better as a judge on RuPaul's Drag Race. That hit obviously played to my my area of expertise. So I was happy about that. I had so much stuff written down. And even again, outside of political stuff, you have Che making a joke about, you know, well, the lowest unemployment for black people ever. Well, I'm pretty sure before the Civil War, unemployment was at zero. It was one of those jokes where, like, people didn't really get it, or they were so shocked, so that Che had to sort of, like, bring it up again. I will dock them a couple points for reusing a couple things. I'm pretty sure this is the second joke in a short time that we've heard Michael Che make involving spreading peanut butter in a certain area with your dog. And I believe this is the third time in a short while where Jose has done the joke of, okay, let's get the list of all the things that blank has done. And then a song plays and only two things show. And it's, oh, it was much shorter than I thought it would be.
And you know what? It is you see it coming down 6th Avenue, turning at Rockefeller Plaza, getting in the elevator, and yet it makes me laugh every time for some reason. And I love that whenever we, you know, after we get the two items, you know, the tax cut, government shutdown, as always, we cut back to Colin Jost, who's, you know, drinking from his mug and surprised that we're back so soon. I know it's dumb, but it does make me laugh every time.
All right, well, let's get into these features here as we get yet another new character from Cecily Strong. Obviously, Stormy Daniels has been in the news, and we get her to talk a little bit about her take on everything and sort of the quote-unquote hero role that she has been thrust into, which we were very complimentary of Cecily last week in particular. How do you feel she did on this one?
Well, I didn't love this. I don't know that I don't want to couch it as a knock on Cecily necessarily, but I didn't love this because I felt like this was not a fully fleshed out, even though, I mean, interestingly, in all the coverage of Stormy Daniels, you know, we haven't really seen much of her. So it's not like we're going to do a specific parody of her. This felt like a very neither here nor there character. It wasn't broad enough to go, okay, if you've never seen, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, it doesn't matter because the You Got Ginsburned is so funny, we're creating a character of whole cloth. And at the same time, it wasn't straightforward and down the middle enough that it was like, no, we're not making fun of Stormy Daniels. We're actually, this is going to be a sharp commentary on something. So I wanted this to land, and I felt like it never did. I liked the idea that the country deserves Stormy Daniels, so I thought that she's the hero that it deserves. So I thought I liked where they came from, but it just and I wanted to like it more than I liked it.
So I'll give her a lot of credit, or her and the writers a lot of credit, for coming in with the POV, because I feel like that is almost never the case with an update feature, right? The update feature usually focuses around the characters. Maybe there are some games that exist within the characters, or as we're about to see, maybe the characters just come on and goof around a little bit. But we very rarely come in with someone saying, okay, this is the message that I'm sort of trying to put out there. So I like the fact that, like, through this unconventional porn star, she sort of is giving this message to America of, you deserve Stormy Daniels, as you said. I wasn't a huge fan of her obviously trying to make the you get a Stormy thing a thing. It didn't necessarily feel like, oh, it was necessarily like an earned catchphrase. But I would say this went for more quote-unquote clapter than laughter, and I think the audience sort of had an adequate reaction in that. I'll give them, again, kudos for doing something different. And I thought that Cecily, given the material, did a very good job as well.
Yeah, I would say. So, yeah, I think, assuming that, you know, this story does not go away, I think we may see her again, probably not in February, but maybe in March, unless the story does go away, because, you know, what even matters anymore? But I would, as much as I would say I didn't love this, I'd be interested, if appropriate, to see them take another swing at this, because I feel like Cecily can deliver. And if they start to figure out what works and doesn't work, this could be really fun. So let's see what happens. Then we get to Prince William and Prince Harry. Alex Moffat and Mikey Day come out with a, as we alluded to in the beginning, gorgeous makeup job, gorgeous prosthetics to really set up this piece of nothing. And while they are not U.S. people, I will quote the, you know, our senators and congressmen. I'd like to reclaim my time. I would like the time that I gave this sketch back, because I feel like they owe me this. This to me was just a lot of nothing.
Yeah. And I'm trying to figure out if it was supposed to be anything, if that makes sense. It honestly seemed like the two of them didn't want to do the Trump son, so they thought, like, okay, we'll come on and do this thing. I mean, there's one thing that can't be denied, and I think it's the chemistry between the two of them. I think that the two of them just are really, really good together, and I doubt that if they put two other people in these really weird bald caps and beards, if things would, you know, do any better. I think just the problem with this was that there was no point to it, you know, and I guess that was, ironically enough, the point to it, that they were meant to give a statement on behalf of the royal family, and it turns out that, oh, they don't speak on political matters, and it turns out the entire thing they were doing there was just making fun of how bald William was. I was wondering for a second, again, speaking towards the Trump sons, if Alex was going to play Prince William as more of an Eric type of figure, since, again, he might be the more homely looking of the two, subjectively speaking. But, you know, I'm glad that they at least tried something different, even if it didn't necessarily take off here.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I guess you're probably more generous than I am, in that I just found this to be, I don't know. I was very bored by this. I feel like this should have been cut and dress, especially since this was a longer piece. This should have just been cut.
Interesting, because I would copy and paste that statement and apply it to the last feature personally.
Now that's interesting. So let's set this up. So it's like, okay, I assume that we're going to be done. In my opinion, we're 0-2 on the features, and then we're getting Robin Mueller, which, you know, again, huge shout out to the makeup department, because Cecily looked fantastic. But beyond that, I have to say I really liked this. I thought this was really. I thought, and we'll go back and forth. I don't want to just sort of rant about the whole thing, but I will say in general, I just thought this was really fun. I thought this is what Kate McKinnon does well. There's nothing to it's all performance. I mean, it's really just that just like, we good, nah, got this. I thought this was really fun, great energy. We were giggling throughout this, and I guarantee if I watch it tomorrow, I'd be like, what was I laughing so hard about? Because there's nothing to it other than the energy and the performance. I thought she was really great.
No, Kate does a fantastic job at mugging, and that's essentially what this entire character was. But again, to ascribe your comment about the royal family towards this, I got bored of this just because I got the sketch 5 seconds. I got the character 5 seconds in, and they did nothing with it. Withholding information is such a tough game to play as a character, playing coy, because there's nothing inherently funny about it unless you're floundering and like trying to accidentally reveal things. Once I realized that we were going absolutely nowhere with this, that she was just going to sit there with a toothpick, you know, maybe like put on a leather jacket or like dance to cool music or something, like try to perpetuate, keep ramping it up. I feel like we stopped at the toothpick and we didn't go anywhere from there. And it just felt like, you know, Kate's been doing some really, again, weird but interesting stuff as Jeff Sessions and, you know, various other members of the administration. But this just did not feel right to me. Maybe I was distracted by the prosthetics of everything, but it just felt very one note to me, to the point of where I was thinking like, okay, let's wrap it up. Let's move on here. We get it. He has information, but he can't reveal anything. Wink, wink.
Boy, I'm so surprised to hear you say that, but I guess to each his own. It's funny because I can't disagree with anything that you say, but I loved the idea that all it was just the attitude of like what Robert Mueller must be thinking right now. And just that idea of when he's like, you know, he didn't leave me a trail of breadcrumbs. He left me full loaves of 7-grain bread from Panera. We were laughing. And we said, at one point he talked about how John Jr. wrote in his Venmo description, Russia, and then he cuts himself off. Just so silly. So, and I love the ending where you talked about you loved Lost, right? But you felt like it didn't have a satisfying ending. This ain't Lost. I thought she delivered that so well. It was really fun. So again, I guess, agree to disagree. For me, it ended on a high note. For you, a low note. What I'm interested in, because at the Tackenberg House, we were very divided. On the next sketch, we come out a weekend update, and we're going to Jeff Bezos's home or his office to talk about where the new Amazon location is going to be. So we're going to get a couple of delegations from around the country. And this, for me, there was definitely a couple of giggles along the way. But for me, this was sort of where the train sort of started to derail for me.
All right. Well, first off, shout out to Kyle Mooney, his only appearance on this episode as Jeff Bezos. Yeah. You can even tell behind the bald cap. Yeah. Yeah. For me, this sort of, and I'll admit it's not really a high peak, but it hit its peak in the two middle segments between the Atlanta, delegation and Chris coming in as Cory Booker. I feel like those two were really fun. The Boston one was okay. I think it was just an excuse to have Jessica Chastain come in and do a Boston accent and for Alex to come back in and do his Casey Affleck, which I feel like we haven't seen since last year, post when they did the Family Feud stuff. I think it was the Family Feud for the Super Bowl when it was New England versus Atlanta, ironically enough.
But when she's doing it, let me ask you, when she's doing, because I thought Jessica Chastain was really good, but watch it when it started, it just made me, I can't believe I've ever said this in my life, it made me miss Sully and Denise. I was like, if you're gonna do that, that's what I want to see.
Yeah, I've thought totally the same thing. In another universe, this would totally be the Massholes to come in. If this was a Jimmy Fallon hosted episode, forget about it. Like that, they totally would do that. So yeah, I totally felt the same way. I enjoyed, as I said, the Atlanta part. Especially Chef Paula Deen. This was a really good episode for AD in particular. I think AD really sold this with, I'm Chef Paula Deen, and I'm gonna be careful about what I say. Yeah. She only had a couple of lines in there. There's a couple of other fun things sprinkled in there, like Atlanta has this thing where people come from different walks of life to come together. Yeah, it's called the Waffle House. And then, oddly enough, the Chick-fil-A reference gets like cheers from the audience. I don't know if there was an actual Atlanta delegation there. I liked Chris's, again, quick Cory Booker, like in and out of like, listen, I know it's not going to be Newark. Bye. But yeah, Miami was a weird one to end on. And I think Mikey Day's Pitbull is very, very odd for some reason. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like, even though we saw Mikey Day as a Bart Simpson lookalike, for some reason, it's the one of him as Pitbull that's more off-putting to me.
It was an odd, I mean, I thought he did a good job. He brought good fun energy. I feel like there's been many Pitbull impressions on Saturday Night Live, and they're all exactly the same. So the fact that it was more like Mikey just got to do it, but it was nothing special, for me, although, certainly great energy.
All right. Well, I have a feeling I know what the two words you're going to ascribe to this jalapeno sketch is, Rich, but let me hear it. What'd you think of the twofer between Heidi Gardner and Jessica Chastain here?
See, this was a hard one for me. Now, I have to assume, based on SNL math, if a featured player who's not on a hot streak is a main character in a sketch, that means the featured player wrote the sketch. So let's make the assumption that this was written by Heidi Gardner. I'm very mixed on this sketch, and here's why. It didn't work. And there was, for me, a real fundamental flaw in the writing of the sketch that they never got out of. But the sketch didn't work in front of the live audience. It was really kind of tanking early on. And I was really taken by, yes, Gardner and yes, Mikey Day, but more how Jessica Chastain just continued leaning in and sitting in the pauses. The fact that someone who doesn't come from a live TV background, isn't an SNL alumni, and isn't even from a sitcom that used to shoot in front of a live audience, the fact that she didn't speed the sketch along in the dead spots really sort of made me appreciate her, even though I felt like I really identified with the 80s Bryant character in the sketch.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this a bit last week with Sam Rockwell, but when you have these sketches that just go back and forth between a bunch of different characters, you have to give the kudos to the host, especially at this point. You have to assume that either Chastain like memorized her lines, or she's just a really good cue card reader that she can be that anticipatory to jump on top of everything. I mean, this is a really stupid game, right? It's that these two characters, they're talking about how much they're improving their mental work, but the fact is they can't understand what the BOGO deal is. Though I would also like quibble a bit with the writing here. Like, how do you have a BOGO deal for a chicken taco, but like I was confused, like, about the, like, she wanted the I was a bit confused about, you know, could they have gotten the same deal for the beef taco? I wasn't entirely sure.
Well, I felt like, and this was my problem, because I felt like the writing of the sketch, the basic premise was, basically, Mikey Day was trying to imply, look, if you want to get a buy one, get one free taco, they don't both have to be chicken. You could get one chicken and one beef for your buy one, get one free. But in order for the sketch to work, he has to not say that to them. And there's no reason why a normal person in this sketch, in this world, wouldn't just say, no, you can, your two tacos don't have to be the same meat. You can have. So there was a lot of gymnastics going around with the straight man to not say the obvious sort of explanation of the sketch so that they could remain confused, which, to your point, made you confused as a cast member. Like, what is actually going on here? And I totally understand. And I think that in the writing of this, it's like, I know that in comedy writing, a lot of comedy writers hate sort of the logic. I hate when people say Nazi, because it's like the logic police. Like, oh, you're such a killjoy. But great logic equals great comedy. And when a great comedic premise has a fundamental logical flaw, many, if not all of the people in the audience will feel it without even knowing that they're feeling it. And 2 + 2 will not equal 4, and it won't be as funny. And I think that this suffered from that.
What I will say, though, is the one little twinkling star in this sketch for me was the random tangent about how Heidi's character, you know, she would usually get beef tacos, but she ate a bunch of raw hamburger meat last weekend and got really sick. It's one of those, like, 10-to-1 types of, like, random details that they sort of throw into a sketch that don't really get acknowledged. I kind of wish we went more down that path and got into the more weird, you know, details of each of these characters. But, you know, we were in and out. And again, I'll also give the highlight, as you mentioned, to 80, who came in and said, look, I'm sitting at the next table, and I just want to tell you all to stop it. Like, again, as the straight person, almost to the straight person in that sketch, I thought her, like, 11th hour cameo walk in and walk out was a lot of fun.
And I did like the nice little button that when it reveals that they're surgeons, and Mikey Day's like, what? And they're like, what? Because a woman can't be a surgeon? Come on. Also, by the way, shout out to Mikey Day's shorts, his little jalapeno short shorts or whatever he was, boxers over his outfit. It just made me giggle. No reason. Just, you know, just he's very, very fun. So, yeah. Now, I didn't sort of, you know, kill this sketch so much because I wanted to save my pure, unadulterated. We come to a pre-taped sketch. Jessica Chastain is a powerful and yet sexy doctor, and she's in love with Chad, the Pete Davidson character. And during the sketch, I was doing a lot of financial math in my head. I almost started to look up on Best Buy, how much do new television sets cost? Because I want to smash my television in while this sketch was going on. I can't believe we came back to this. I think now they've done the Chad thing. If my math is right, they've done now this sketch 147 times. I don't have an actual count, but that's what it seems like to me. Was this sketch any different than any other time we've seen it? I so want to talk to someone who loves this sketch so that I could say without any condescension or any animosity, tell me what you like about the sketch, because I just don't get it.
Yeah, well, if you remember, when Chad appeared in a live sketch during another episode this season, we actually were not that bad on it. And maybe because we're like, okay, we're taking him out of this environment where these pre-tapes are so purposefully drawn out. You know, the joke, and I'll put the joke in quotes here, is that they want to get the melodrama out of the fact that here's this person, you know, really throwing their heart and emotions into this relationship, and then you have Chad just going, okay. And when you put it in a different setting, you know, the energy gets changed up a little bit. So I'm a little weirded out that they decided to go back to it, because as you mentioned, it's the same exact thing. It's the same thing we saw in the Julia Louis-Dreyfus episode. It's the same thing we saw in the Benedict Cumberbatch episode. And if you sort of track those between, you know, the pool boy and the professor and the student going to the Gal Gadot episode with the Narnia-like land, that's like a weird escalation. And I almost felt like we went into a de-escalation going back to the hospital. Again, Jessica Chastain did her very best here to go for her Oscar moment in portraying this lovesick doctor, but I don't know. I agree with you. I was just too soured on the character at this point. I said in general I didn't really hate anything. This is very much the exception. I'm good with Chad to just go away for a good portion of time or appear in live sketches in a different perspective, but it just feels like we're hitting that same damn nail with this big old hammer over and over and over again.
Ugh. Over and over again. Ugh, so boring to me. Now, I know this never would have happened, but at the end, when sort of the big payoff, she's like, oh, what did he do to get in here? And it turns out he ate dog poo, which I thought was neither heightening nor funny. I would have loved if it was explained that he had eaten all this raw hamburger last weekend. I thought it would have been such a nice tie-in to the previous sketch for no reason. Like, it could have added a lot of sort of fun to that. So,
well, I almost felt like it was unintentionally tied in when the last sketch ends with, oh, we're surgeons, cut to doctor's orders. You know, you think, yes, for a second, oh, yes, that's an odd connection. Though I do agree with your theory that you mentioned earlier, that Chad was probably earlier on in the episode because it's weird to save a recurring character for this late, though we're about to talk about another one, and that because it got much less well received than the Fresh Prince sketch, deservedly so, they switched him up.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I definitely think that you're right. So, I hate to end on another boy. I don't even know what we're back with Keenan as the crazy director, former actor from the Jeffersons is going to bring some Jeffersons like, direction to what is a serious movie. I thought this was rough. I loved that Jessica Chastain, feeling that the crowd was not with this sketch very early on, stuck to it, really committed to it. It actually almost made me feel a little bad for her, that I was just like, oh, not her fault at all. But I just, I know this is super silly and it's super broad and it's supposed to be super silly and broad. But it was kind of cute the first time, but again, it's another reoccurring character I don't know that we need to see again.
When's the last time we saw this? Was it like, I know there was one with Chris Hemsworth. I know that there was one they did with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler when they hosted together. Was that the last time we saw them do this?
Was it Felicity Jones? I don't think it was. I can't remember who it was. I don't think it was this year, now that I say that. I don't remember who it was. I'm sort of blanking on the last time they did it. But it didn't feel like Chad, where it was like, oh my God, I can't believe we're already doing this again. It didn't feel like that. It just felt like, did we ever need to see this again? I'm sort of surprised that we needed to do this one more time. I want to hear what you think, but I will also say, I don't know that I felt that Leslie Jones, who is naturally such a broad, good at being broad, was the right person to be in this. So I don't know that even sort of picking her was the right person, but I'll say good on Jessica for sort of delivering.
See, it's interesting because I would say that Leslie was better at the joke part of this, which was the, like, you gotta react like you're some sort of clown-like sitcom character. But it was weird when I first saw her as, like, oh, she's supposed to be cast in this, serious legal film. Because, once again, props to Leslie Jones, but she still has some problems reading lines. I think she muffed up one of her lines there in the very beginning. But I guess it made up for it, again, with the way she played these. With these sketches, for me, I agree that they're silly. They're always the renditions for me are always funnier when Keenan impersonates what they're supposed to do than when they actually do them, if that makes sense.
I would
sense.
Agree with that. Yeah.
Just because, like, Jessica Chastain, again, she was great, but I would have liked it if she could have done more specifically what Keenan was doing. You know, she didn't even do the why correctly, which, again, that's me being my own, like, director nitpicker. And I think there is something funny about, like, oh, they're doing goofy faces and, like, moving their faces around like flubber. But the enjoyment I get out of the sketch is always when there's an improv game that I like to play a lot. It's from Whose Line, called Hollywood Director, where the joy is essentially just coming out and telling people to do ridiculous things and do the scene again. And that's what I sort of felt, that chaotic element, whenever Keenan came out. And so I always liked when he would impersonate the things to do, but when they actually did the things, it actually did it play for me. So from that perspective, I guess I didn't like the actual punchline of the joke, more so the setup to it.
Yeah, fair enough. Can't argue with you across the board. Can't argue. So, yeah. So an unfortunate way to end the night. The good nights, though, a lot of warmth. Obviously, Jessica Chastain seemed to really connect with the team, and as did Troy. There was a lot of talking with him. No real cameos this week to sort of speak of. So yeah. So I would just say sort of a nice warm sort of end to the show.
Yeah, they had like their arms around each other. It seemed like and I was watching a bit of the promos that they were doing, and Jessica Chastain from the beginning seemed like very nervous but very excited to be doing SNL. And I know I keep talking about this, but these first time hosts are really doing a great job, and they also seem to all sort of have a nice like. I don't know, like, they really idolize the show, almost. This idea of, like, getting to come on and do it. So maybe that's sort of what has buoyed the episode in my eyes, just because Jessica Chastain did such a good job, and you could tell she was having so much fun with it. And we really have had an interesting run of, episodes here. I would say that this was, this overall, we're halfway through the season at this point. I don't know how you feel, Rich. This has been a very mixed season for me. And it's understandable given that, this is not only a bounce back from what I feel like was a very good season overall, but you have a new writing staff that's being, worked on to this day. It feels like something might be off with the writing. The performances are really, really good from both host and cast member perspectives, but a lot of these sketches, the writing just doesn't seem to lift off. Maybe it's just because I sort of glommed onto these three or four sketches that I really, really like, that I'm like, okay, this is... a top three episode of this season, which if you compare across the seasons might not be very comparable, but at least within the confines of season 43, it's definitely like the One-Eyed Man in the Kingdom of the Blind, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think it's been very hit and miss, and when it hits, it hits. When it misses, it misses. And as you said, there's a couple of really fun sketches within this. So the nice thing about this is it certainly was not a show. Regardless of how I felt about certain pieces, it was definitely not a show that I walked away from going, oh boy, did I just waste 90 minutes of my life. Like, I mean, it was still really fun. I still enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good, a lot of fun mixed in through all of it. So I'm really glad for that.
So after we've had this run of first-time hosts, we are calling back to not only a recurring host, Rich, but an alum of the show. Next week, Will Ferrell hosting with musical guest Chris Stapleton, both returning. How should we prepare our hopes as an audience for this Will Ferrell episode?
I mean, Will Ferrell has not been back, and I think I want to call it 6 years at this point.
I don't know if you count 2 years ago during, I think it was actually the aforementioned Chris Hemsworth episode when he did that cold open as George W. Bush, about the campaign announcement of Donald Trump. So I'm assuming we'll get some sort of reappearance here as well. But other than that, he really has not hosted in quite a while.
Yeah, talk about one of the all-time greats. I mean, he really is one of the all-time greats. He's now 50. I mean, so it's crazy to think that, he's at the age of the dad, could be the same age as the dad of Heidi Gardner or Pete Davidson. But that said, just super looking forward to it. I mean, I don't think we'll see a ton of reoccurring characters because that hasn't been the pattern. He does some, but again, is there a reason to bring back George W. Bush? I don't know. Saddam Hussein, no. Like, a lot of his characters also relied a lot on other alumni, so I don't know what we'll see. I do think we will probably see some alumni show up. I mean, I think you could see a Kristen Wiig or an Anna Gasteyer or a Molly Shannon. Like, so I think maybe we'll see somebody, maybe not a big, big name, but I think we'll see somebody. But boy, when we talk about Jessica Chastain committing to characters, when Will Ferrell is in a sketch, and I will say this in advance, the thing to watch with Will Ferrell, and he has talked about this, is not when a sketch is going well. When he is in a sketch that starts to bomb, he goes big, and he loves just going, forget of 10, going to 13 in a sketch that isn't working just to amuse the other people in the sketch and make it fun for him. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of his most famous sketches, the Get Off the Shed guy and even more Cowbell, you could argue that I think a lot of people remember Christopher Walken in there, but I would argue that, you know, had Will Ferrell not worn that belly shirt you know, made the other bandmates go crazy, that sketch might not even have really taken off into the SNL zeitgeist. So I'm excited. I will, you know, I will take some umbrage with your point about the recurring characters. I bet dollars to donuts we're going to see a Celebrity Jeopardy in there, just because considering how much this SNL cast loves to do impersonations that can waver sometimes between good and bad, I have a feeling they're going to do a Celebrity Jeopardy here, just because it's been a while since this happened. I believe it happened the last time he hosted in 2012, but as you said, it's been a while. I'm expecting some.
I think it would have been on the 40th anniversary episode. They did a big. He actually wrote it with Norm Macdonald, and that was a big push. Yeah, but you're right. That would be great. Oh my God, how great would that be?
Yeah, and it's been 4 years since it. You know, they brought back Chad 3 months later. I'm sure they could do Celebrity Jeopardy. And it's also interesting as well because it is an alumni-hosted episode, but this is also the third episode of 3 weeks in a row. And usually what happens there is you can tell that the writers are running out of steam, or that they might start like grasping at premises that they might not have when they're more well-rested going in. But maybe the fact that they're bringing in such a fantastic performer to anchor this last one, maybe that will sort of counteract what usually happens against that last show in the slot.
Are you implying we're going to get a Willie at Weekend Update? Is that what I should be bracing myself for?
No, oh, I feel like Willie. The last time we saw him was last season, so maybe I have my fingers crossed here. But I feel like Willie is dead and gone, much like his old dog Lucius.
Yeah, I will also say it's worth noting when I saw that Chris Stapleton was the musical guest, I got all excited because the last time that Chris Stapleton hosted, we loved him so much that we went to go see him at the Greek Theater, and it was a really fun night. And then I remembered, nope, that's Sturgill Simpson. I'm confusing my rowdy country music guys. Chris Stapleton has never been on SNL before, and I don't know who he is other than he has a big beard and he's country. So I am looking forward to reintroducing myself to a person I don't know. Chris Stapleton as musical guest should be a lot of fun.
Well, if you guys have any thoughts out there about what's to come with Will Ferrell and Chris Stapleton or Sturgill Simpson, and if you have any thoughts about this episode as well, it's clear, and even, you know, from when I posted my list online, this is yet another, I feel like, second episode in a row, very polarizing. Either a lot of people liked it or a lot of people didn't like it. I'm sort of happy that we fell each into one camp here, Rich, and we could talk about the good and bad of each sketch, but we'd love to hear your thoughts about it. You can always leave a comment here on the postshowrecaps.com page, and you can always reach out to us on Twitter. Rich is at Rich Tack, and I am at a Mike Bloom type. Let's keep the conversation going as we finish out January 2018 with hopefully a strong show.
And come back. Look forward to talking about it next week. Let's get in alumni mode and get talking SNL. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.